welcome to a special sports edition of the Happy Rant Podcast. I'm Ted Kluck, joined by Barnabas Piper, who is the only other guy on our program who watches sports. Pipe, we've had some requests online, man, on Twitter from our great listenership, asking for more of this, asking for a little bit more sports content, and far be it from us to deny the people what they want. So we have a
Super Bowl coming up. No disappointing listeners.
Yeah, we're not going to disappoint listeners, man. Absolutely not. We're all about our listeners, and we're also all about talking about things that we enjoy talking about anyway, which is NFL football. So, Pipe, the AFC and NFC championship games are in the books. We have a Super Bowl matchup. So let's get right into this. We have New England versus Atlanta. So the Atlanta Falcons obviously haven't been they haven't been to a Super Bowl since a really painful thing occurred many, many years ago in your formative years, which was the Falcons beating your beloved Minnesota Vikings. So talk about that a bit. Talk about how old were you when that happened? Where were you in life?
Let's see, I was so it was the 98 season. So the game would have been early 99. So I would have been, sophomore in high school, junior in high school, something like that. I was at, you know, the most sort of rabid Vikings fan stage of life. And up to that point, I had only heard tell of how heartbreaking being a Vikings fan was. Like, they'd been disappointing. Right. They'd lost in the first round of the playoffs. But no, like, rip your guts out moments until then. So the Vikings went 15-1 that year. They broke the NFL. It broke the NFL scoring record. It was subsequently broken again. But at the time, like, the most explosive offense in NFL history. Randall Cunningham had a resurgence as like a 37-year-old throwing to Chris Carter and Randy Moss, who were just the perfect complement as receivers. They had Robert Smith at running back, who had just incredible breakaway speed. They had an opportunistic defense, and they were so good. First round bye, and then they destroyed a couple teams in the playoffs that year to make it to the NFC Championship game, where they were favored over the Falcons, who I think went 14-2 that year, because that was the
Falcons
dirty.
Were good, but they were unremarkable in the sense that, I mean, who's even their quarterback?
Chris Chandler. That's right. Yeah, and he was also
kind of
old.
Yeah, yeah, he was old. He played for the Colts for a bunch of years. He was a journeyman.
And he had a good year that year, but not, you know, yeah. he was no Randall Cunningham. And but they had Jamal Anderson. I wanted to say Jamal Lewis, but that was another good running back. So Jamal Anderson, they ran him like 480 times. He rushed for like 1800 yards and a bunch of touchdowns. Yep. It made the Dirty Bird dance famous.
You could name another player from their offense besides Chris Chandler and Jamal Anderson.
Was Andre Rison on that team?
I think Bad Moon Rison was on that team. Bob Whitfield was their left tackle.
They had a decent passing offense, but I don't remember the players who were the recipients of said passes.
Who made it happen, exactly. Exactly.
And they were also kind of an opportunistic turnover defense, not a real stuff the offense type of defense. Yeah, not a lot of three and outs kind of thing. The Vikings kicker Gary Anderson had not missed the entire year, so perfect on all field goals and all extra points, and he missed a kick that would have won the game for the Vikings, as time expired.
And Gary Anderson was in like his 35th year at that point.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, he'd been around forever.
And Morton Anderson for the Falcons kicked the field goal that won it for them, if my recollection is correct. After Gary Anderson missed the field goal, I don't remember much that happened in that game, because that was when I actually had my heart ripped out. And so I was somewhat lifeless. The Falcons went on and got thoroughly thumped by the Elway and Terrell Davis led Broncos, which I think the Vikings probably would have gotten beat by that team too, because those Broncos teams were so good.
They were.
But, yes, that was the last time the Falcons did anything good on a football field.
Dude, so I want to talk about that. I want to talk about one aspect of the Falcons that to date nobody has brought up yet, and that's the fact that if you look at the history of the Atlanta Falcons, they've had some great uniforms. Like the red helmet, red jersey, gray pants era was great. Even the, like, you know, the Deion Sanders black jersey, black helmet, gray pants era, I think was pretty strong. And now they've got this uniform pipe. It looks like an arena football uniform.
It's I was gonna say XFL. You know,
it looks like an XFL arena. The thing is a freaking mess. This thing.
Yeah, it's like panels of red and black and white, just sort of stitched together in triangles.
Dude, it's panels on top of panels. It's busy. It's terrible. And I feel like Atlanta could have thrown a dart at like a poster of their uniform history and picked anything except this monstrosity. So I want to be excited about Matt Ryan and about them being in the Super Bowl and you know, this high potent octane offense that they have. But I'm a big aesthetics guy. I'm sure you are too. Like the way uniforms look and the way the two uniforms look together. And I got to be honest with you, man, as long as we're on this, honest to gosh, I kind of feel the same way about New England. Great team. All the respect in the world for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
Historically cool uniforms, like back when they had the Minuteman hiking the football.
Dude, the Minuteman hiking the football was so fresh with that red jersey and the white pants and the three thick stripes. This thing that they've stuck with for like a decade now, this thing is blah. It's blasé to me.
Yeah.
I don't know. These are two like very unsatisfying uniforms, and I think what makes it hurt more is the fact that they could be good. You know?
Yeah. There's both the names, the logos, and the color schemes are set up for success if they're done tastefully, and they're not.
Absolutely.
They're so bad. Now, my first year of Little League Baseball, I played at this little city park, and so we were funded by, it was like a publicly funded park league, and so we had like crummy mesh back hats and t-shirts, and that was our uniform.
Yeah, yeah.
And we would play against these parks that had like boosters, you know, like parents would or sponsors, like local restaurants. And so they come in with like their stirrups and their cool polyester baseball pants and their full-on uniform. And like we were not a good baseball team, but we lost before we played because we're like, that's a baseball team and we're kids wearing t-shirts. So there's
wearing on the bottom? Were you just wearing sweats or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, some kids would like play in jeans. I mean, it was like watching it was like this, you know, like the scene in The Sandlot where the snotty kids ride up on their bikes. That was the way we looked versus the way they looked, except that we were not the good Sandlot team. We were really crappy.
Oh,
but we just felt inferior because uniforms absolutely matter. And if you look sharp, you're a half step up on the other team that doesn't.
I totally agree. And what kills me about this Super Bowl is that neither team will look sharp. And
they look tacky.
They do. They look tacky. That's the thing. They're like, they're trying too hard. You know what
I mean? You know what'll redeem it for New England?
What's that?
Bill Belichick's cutoff hoodie. Because nothing is classier than Belichick's cutoff hoodie.
Can we talk about that for a minute? Because here's the thing. Everybody hates the Patriots. Everywhere I go, somebody's telling me about how much they hate the Patriots. I love the Patriots. I love watching them win. I love watching them like work around problems with their personnel. I find Bill Belichick utterly fascinating, man. And
I love watching them stick it to Roger Goodell year after year after year.
Yes.
Because he's the literal worst.
It's a twofold question. Why do people hate the Patriots so much? So I want you to speak to that. But then why can't you hate the Patriots? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So why do people hate him so much, Pi?
I think the first answer, and of course every Patriot hater would deny this, is just jealousy.
Yeah.
Because if you remember in 2001 when they won their first Super Bowl, I think it was against the Rams. It was Brady, you know, the Brady had just taken over for Bledsoe, and he was kind of the upstart sixth round pick, blah, blah, blah. They were a beloved team. They were like this gritty, like make up for their lack of talent and whatever. And they built a dynasty out of doing the exact same thing. They've never been more talented than the other teams that they beat in terms of like skill position players.
Right.
And I think that's part of the reason people hate them is like they shouldn't be this good, but they're actually genuinely smarter than everybody else in the NFL. And everybody hates the smart kid.
Isn't everybody that the hates goal, though? I mean, isn't that what you should endeavor to be as a franchise? Like, here's what I love about the Patriots.
But football is not a smart game. Like, I mean, it is. It should be. But it's still sort of that, like, macho meathead, like, 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and we're just going to run them over. And so when you get the Patriots who are like, you know, we're going to play two down linemen on defense, and we're going to run six defensive backs, and then the next game we're going to run, you know, a 5-3. Where we're just going to load the box. And they don't even have a scheme. Whereas other teams are like, this is the defense we run, and we're just going to run it so well that we stop the other team. Right. And then they get outsmarted. And so people hate the smart kid who just always figures things out.
Absolutely. And the Patriots, they get smart players. They draft smart players. They develop their players. They get rid of guys before they get old. Belichick is notoriously cold-hearted and gangster about when he gets rid of people, but it works. Oh, yeah. And I think what's fascinating to me about it is that it's been a completely sustainable enterprise. You know, you see other teams go through peaks and valleys. So let's say a team will win a Super Bowl and then it has to have, like, you know, the big fire sale in the offseason because it can't re-sign people. Right. And, you know, Belichick, to me, he decides the few positions that he's going to spend money on, and then everybody else is completely expendable. And
you have, like, the perfect marriage of him and Tom Brady, because Brady is this, he, you know, Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan level, like, sociopathic competitor who doesn't, all he wants to do is win. And so he could make probably 10 to 15 million more per year than he does. But he knows that 10 to 15 million can go to defensive backs and a good left guard and, you know, some depth. And all of a sudden they now have this functional team instead of stars and scrubs.
So I guess this is why this is so fascinating to me, is that you have people at every level, starting with Bob Kraft and Bill Belichick, and you work your way down. Even the players are making smart choices as it pertains to the sustainability of the enterprise. So,
but they'll take somebody out back and shoot them if they don't get on board. That's the Belichick thing. Yeah. Like, you'll see him sign a free agent and cut him 10 days later because he didn't get with the program.
What's fascinating to me about it, though, is the free agents throughout the course of the Belichick regime who have been malcontents in other places, who they've assimilated and used brilliantly. Corey Dillon being maybe the first example of this.
And everybody thought he was washed up, and then he goes there and rushes for like 1,400 yards and 12 touchdowns or something.
Absolutely. This is a guy who was kind of a locker room cancer in Cincinnati, put up big numbers, kind of got disinterested and disenfranchised toward the end of his run as a Bengal, goes to New England. You know, Belichick gets him for pennies on the dollar because that's the model, right? And then he ends up being absolutely the perfect guy for the system. Yeah. Randy Moss is the next example of this.
Well, and that's the other thing, is like, people think system and they think guys who just sort of keep their mouth shut and go about their business. Moss and Rob Gronkowski are two of the most flamboyant, arrogant NFL athletes ever. And they work in that system because Belichick doesn't give two craps what those people do with their lifestyle. He only cares about how well they play in his system. And those guys are perfect football players for the system. They got on the same page as Brady. They played by his rules, and then they could be as mouthy as they wanted elsewhere, or Gronk could go, like, party in the Bahamas in his off week, Belichick's like, I don't care. Can he catch a touchdown?
Absolutely. That's what's great about it. And I think that's what's great from an X's and O's standpoint too. So again, you look at the history of the Belichick regime, there's always been offensively a guy who was a matchup nightmare. And for years it was Randy Moss. You know, he was your stretch the field guy. He was your, you know, matchup problem for coordinators. And now it's Gronkowski, the guy who just sort of skews things from a defensive perspective, where you go, how are we going to cover this guy? And what do we have to devote personnel wise to covering this guy? And then Belichick has all these other pieces like Wes Welker and now Danny Amendola and
Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, who caught two touchdowns in the AFC Championship game. And like, and I think that's another reason people don't like him, is because other teams are like loaded up with, you know, these Adonis skill position players. And then you look at the Patriots and you're like, they have a bunch of 5'9", 190-pound white guys who run a 4.5 40, and they just dismantle defenses. Now they do have, and because they don't even have Gronk right now, and they're still doing it. And they get
Dude,
these running.
Has, has any organization in the history of the world ever given more hope to white receivers everywhere? Like, if you're a white guy and you're playing wide receiver in like high school, how can the Patriots not be your favorite team?
Well, and then they did it with Danny Woodhead, who was a Division III running back who's literally 5'7". And
exactly.
He went there and became a matchup nightmare out of the backfield. And then, I mean, he proved himself to be good when he went to San Diego and whatever too. But, I mean, he played at the same level as like Taylor University and Wheaton College, exactly, where you and I went. And exactly, you know, just these tiny little schools. Now, I think he broke the NCAA record for rushing, but
yeah. Yeah, he was
but still,
great.
Division III, and he's 5'7 and 200 pounds. He's just a little stocky dude. Yeah, they pull these guys out. And then guys who are – they're sort of looked at as like, he might be a marginal sort of kick returner type, and all of a sudden he catches 80 passes for him out of the backfield. You know, he's their new pass-catching running back. They just – they see things that other people don't see, and other people hate him for it.
Absolutely. So this brings me to another topic. One of my favorite players, I think my favorite guy to watch this year – And I want to know, you know, for you, either on Atlanta or New England, who your favorite guy to watch was. But my guy was LeGarrette Blount. And LeGarrette Blount, I think I love because he fits this paradigm of Belichick taking someone off somebody else's scrap heap and then just making the perfect system guy out of that player. So I'm a fan of big backs. I've always been a big back guy. Blount was a big back at Oregon who in his college career was probably most...
Quick trigger warning for listeners. Yeah. This is not the same as like baby got back. This is big running backs. So like large human beings, just to clarify.
If they're listening to this program, they know, man. They know what we're talking about.
Okay. But fair enough.
It's a Blount. The first thing I loved about LeGarrette Blount, and this is going to be a trigger warning too, because it shows how much of a jerk I am. But LeGarrette Blount in college was going through a handshake line after a game, and he did something that I think I've dreamed my entire life of doing in a handshake line after a game, which is decking some dude from the other team. And I'm not condoning this.
There was always one dude. There was always one dude on the other team who needed to be decked. And just I never had the stones to do it.
Dude, and you go through that awful handshake line and you just like offer your limp hand and you don't make eye contact and it's the worst, right? But LeGarrette Blount took matters into his own hands, literally, and he decked some dude in a handshake line, which, again, not condoning. It was the wrong thing to do, whatever, but it did make him memorable.
Whatever.
Whatever. So then he goes to the NFL. I think he maybe smoked a bunch of weed. I don't remember the particulars, but for whatever reason, he was undesirable, and he was available for a bargain.
Well, he's big and he's slow. Like, he's not agile. If you looked at him in the combine, you're like, oh, he looks like a running back. He's 6'2 and 240 pounds or whatever. But
yeah,
he wasn't fast, and he's not like he can't make a cut.
Dude, he's but here's just, what he does well. Here's what he does impeccably well, and this is why I enjoy watching him. Nobody runs behind a fullback better than LeGarrette Blount in the
NFL. That's true.
He gets what's blocked, man. He goes between the tackles, and he gets what's blocked. And this is the crazy thing, right? So if I'm starting a franchise right now, and if I have to get 3 or 4 yards per carry and I'm building into my offense the aspect of having to do that periodically, I might take him, man. I might take him over a bunch of other guys who are flashier and can do more. And that's an example of the Belichick way, right? He's not spending – you know, he hasn't thrown money at that position ever. You know, yeah. When was the last time they had an elite, like, big dollar, big-ticket running back? Never. But
I mean, they've drafted some guys like second, third rounds, I think, but they've never really
Lawrence
worked
Maroney.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. University of Minnesota guy.
That's right. That's right. I enjoy watching LeGarrette Blount though. Who's that guy for you, Pipe, on either team?
Man.
You really just enjoy watching.
I watch the Falcons so rarely. I don't really have a good answer for that. The thing that I love watching on the Falcons is their offensive line. Because their running backs are they're fine players.
Yeah.
But that offensive line makes their life so easy and makes Matt Ryan's life so easy. But they're also just nasty. Like, they're nasty blockers. They love to blow up a defense and create a hole for the running back to go through. So, like, watching Devontae Freeman or Tevin Coleman break a run because there's, like, it's a gap 7 people wide and they just stroll through it is fun to watch because those guys in the secondary are fun. Like when they get to that level, they're fun to watch. The obvious answer also is Julio Jones because I mean, he's a monster.
He's freaky.
He's just a monster. That touchdown that he broke against the Packers was like, I just sat back and laughed because that's not a human thing to do. He was
insane. Funny. This is one of those like styles make fights games where, you know, we just spent 20 minutes extolling the virtues of all of New England's little scrap heap, nobody wanted them receivers. But then, you know, you look across the field and you got aliens. You know what I mean? You've got Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, who's pretty freaky. I mean, you've just got
he's another like 6'3", 210. Like he's just a big route runner.
Yeah. Big physical route runner, great 50-50 ball guys. I mean, guys who are just like, you know, gonna control things when the ball is in the air. So it's a really
I love the way Kyle Shanahan calls plays too, because he's so good at using the players he has. Because obviously Julio Jones makes life easy on an offensive coordinator anyway, but he puts him even in a better position to succeed. Because how do you get a guy like that into single coverage? Because why would the defense do that? But he does it anyway. And then the way they use their running backs out of the backfield, I love a team that can throw to their running backs well. Because it's, you know, not just sort of like the screen pass, but like get them out 8-10 yards downfield to use them as receivers. Shanahan's a real smart play caller.
He really is, man. And so here's my question with Kyle Shanahan. Do you think he's going to be able to make the leap and be the kind of CEO figure that he will need to be as a head coach?
Man, that is such a hard thing to predict because, like,
reason I ask is you see so many of these, like, successful coordinators, these X and O guys, the Josh McDaniels types who – They make the leap up and they can't seem to do it. You know what I mean?
But the difference is like McDaniels came out of a Belichick system where you kind of wonder how, like, he's a piece of that puzzle, but that puzzle stands on its own.
That's true.
Whereas like Shanahan, he made the Redskins tick a couple years ago. Like he made Kirk Cousins good. That's that's not an easy thing to do.
And honestly, then before that, he made Robert Griffin III good.
Right.
He really
And in two entirely different ways. So he looked at what the guys could do and go, okay, well, how do we build an offense around what these guys can do? And then he goes down there with Matt Ryan, Matt Ryan's always been an above average quarterback, but he's never been elite. And all of a sudden, he could very well win the NFL MVP this year because he drew every ounce of talent out of him. You know, Julio Jones was always a freak, but now he got that contribution out of every other offensive player. And so I think he can do it simply because it looks like he can look at what he has and go, okay, how do we build a scheme around the talent we have and then supplement that talent like they did with, who did they sign? Alex Mack, I think, as a center and drafting a couple offensive linemen. So I think, it sounds like he's going to go be the Niners head coach if all breaks that way.
The Niners desperately need a guy like that. You know,
If he goes there and he's the play caller, Colin Kaepernick could become a real NFL quarterback again.
I totally agree.
When he was under Jim Harbaugh, he was. And then he had offensive coordinators who tried to turn him into like a conventional quarterback. And I mean, you can't do that. He could be Robert Griffin III from whatever that was 5 years ago.
Dude, and what's so interesting about that is that when Kaepernick was with Harbaugh, they were doing a lot of the same things scheme-wise that RG3 did under Shanahan with Redskins. So I think a lot of that material is going to get dusted off. A lot of the pistol stuff, a lot of the half-field reads, a lot of the play action.
A lot of using Kaepernick as a runner, which I think he's actually probably a better runner than Griffin, simply because he's bigger and stronger.
He's bigger. He can take more pounding, most definitely, man. It'll be fascinating to see what the curve is like in San Francisco. You know, I haven't looked at their roster closely, and I've heard people say things like they're the, you know, it's the thinnest roster in the league, and they have the furthest to go in terms of talent. But that's true.
But the difference is, I think they also don't have a ton of money tied up in garbage players. So they can make some strategic splashes in free agency if they draft. Their biggest need right now is a GM who's not an idiot, and I don't know who that is because they just fired their GM, and I think their owner is also a big issue because I think he's kind of an interfering owner. That's another thing that both the Falcons and the Patriots have in common is an owner who lets their front office people run the show and they don't meddle in it.
That's so huge, man. I think that's almost essential to survival in the NFL.
Yeah.
You got to have an owner who stays out of the way and just writes the checks. Pipe, we're almost out of time here, but I want to get your prediction on the game before we go. First of all, what are you doing for the game? What is Super Bowl Sunday at the Piper residence look like? Are you having a party? Are you going to a party?
I don't have any set plans, but I will probably end up watching with some friends at some Super Bowl party. Watching a Super Bowl requires large groups of people, at least 2/3 of whom never watch football. I think that's sort of the rule.
That's
They're
true.
There for this. You know, you need to have 2/3 of the people who are there for the commercials and the snacks, and 1/3 of the people who care deeply about the game.
Absolutely, man. That's exactly what it looks like in my house too. So that's a good mix. Pipe, what do you envision happening here game wise?
Oh man, I think the Patriots win. Because I don't know how to pick against them.
Yeah.
It seems almost undoable. I think if anybody can figure out how to slow down a Shanahan scheme and Julio Jones, it's the Belichick monster.
Yep.
And I would bet that the game is something like, if they win, it's because they keep the points down, you know, because if it gets up into like the 30s, it means the Falcons are putting points on the board, and that's bad news. So I like something like 24-20 or 24-21 Patriots, something along those
lines. Dude, that's funny. I was going to say the exact same thing. I think it'll be a lower scoring game than people think. And I think New England wins with defense. You know, I think they're gonna move the pieces around the board such that that they find an answer to this Atlanta offense. And
when was the last time there was a shootout Super Bowl?
Dude,
like,
I don't know.
Two teams just trading points.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to look. You know what's funny, Pipe, about me and about the Super Bowl? Like, and I was telling my wife about this a couple of weeks ago. I get to this point in the season, and I kind of stop caring. You know what I mean? Like, I'm enjoying talking about this, and I love football. I can talk about it ad nauseum, but I didn't watch a ton of the conference championships. Like, we went to see a movie, and I don't know. I'm more of an early season guy. I love all the draft stuff now. I'm excited about the Senior Bowl and the East-West game and, you know, thinking about scouting and all those things. But I don't have, like, this photographic memory of recent Super Bowls, but I'm sure there have been some shootouts.
Yeah,
I just don't remember.
Every year at about this time, I try to think back on who won the Super Bowl last year, and it takes me about 3 minutes to piece it together because I can't remember.
Yeah, I know it. It's not like a huge thing, you know. It's not a big monumentous thing that I remember a whole lot. But I'm with you. I'm going with New England. Low scoring game. My son is a rabid Patriots fan, so if they lose, he will be in the deepest of funks. So just for the good of our household, I'm hoping that New England wins. But Pipe, this has been fun, man. We need to do this more often. More sports related programming, special episodes on the Happy Rant. If you like this, if you want more of this, let us know on Twitter, and we will deliver. Because
I tell you, when we teased last episode that we might do something like this, we got quite a few responses on Twitter of people saying more sports. We need more sports. So yeah, we should definitely do this more. Maybe we can do a post Super Bowl recap and I don't know, talk a little basketball, your love for Gordon Hayward, something along those lines.
Dude, that would be great. We could do a Gordon Hayward app. We can do a little NFL draft app. We should do it.
Yeah, draft for sure. We should do a sport, like a sports man crush app. Like, who do you just, you are swooning for Gordon Hayward. And I imagine there's a bit of a list there.
There's a list, man. There's always a running list. Probably.
Yeah, you have one in your little lockup diary. I know it's there.
Absolutely, man. The kind with like a little snap on it.
Yep, little clasp for sure.
You know what? I would rather keep that in my missional wear Happy Rant Moleskin journal. But until then, the clasp diary will have to be sufficient.
Yeah, it's a sorry substitute, but it's what we've got.
It is. It's all we've got. Pipe, this has been fun. We've wandered to and fro. Until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. Resonate has helped us with our editing and mastering pretty much from the beginning of the podcast. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Mark and Jake do a fantastic and timely job with all sorts of podcast services. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast.
In a recent survey, parents reported that 52% of homeschooled children need learning accommodations. These parents need practical advice, encouragement, and hope to fuel their homeschooling efforts. The Empowering Homeschool Conversations podcast is where parents gain wisdom on how to teach unique learners successfully at home, like Laura, who recently told us, "I needed this episode. I don't need a fancy curriculum or need to be a special ed teacher to teach my son. You have given me hope." To listen now, go to Life Audio or search Empowering Homeschool Conversations on your favorite podcast app.